This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Frank Gaffney, former Assistant Secretary of Defense, President of the Center for Security Policy, and the host of Secure Freedom Radio on the Radio America Network. And Frank, thanks so much for being with us.
Great to be with you. Thanks.
One of the ideas that you have talked about a lot throughout the war on terror, but especially now as we think about the threat posed by the Iranian nuclear program and the radical agenda that that regime has in mind, is your focus on Sharia law. You've likened it to the H1N1 virus to some extent. Explain what you mean by that and why this should be a much greater focal point than it is.
Well, just a point of clarification. We often use the term Sharia law, but Sharia as authoritative Islam, and I'm not talking about some whack jobs in a cave. I'm talking about the people who say they speak for and run Islam. They regard it as more than just the law. They see it as a comprehensive program that is supposed to govern all aspects of life, not only for Muslims, but for all of us, because at the end of the day, it's not just about how people practice their faith. It's also about how the world is run, namely by a global caliphate. And where the problem comes into sharp focus with respect to terrorism is under Sharia, authoritative Islam says that it is the obligation of all Muslims to engage in jihad, that is to say, holy war. It can come in several forms: holy war of the violent kind, which we've of course seen post 9/11, holy war of a more stealthy kind, a kind of incremental, supposedly nonviolent, but very insidious kind. And then for people who aren't going to actually engage in one or the other of those themselves, there's a responsibility under Sharia to engage in support for jihad through tithing and other ways. The problem, and the reason I use this analogy to the swine flu virus. I mean, you obviously have to think of this as the anti-swine flu virus because, of course, pork is, right. is considered to be very impure by the Sharia types. But the point is that I think of this problem, which our law enforcement community, military personnel, intelligence agencies, homeland security folks, none of them at the moment are allowed to address this underlying reason for jihad, the purpose, the compulsion that people feel to engage in it.
Why is that? Why are people refraining from it when it's such an integral part?
It's politically incorrect at best. We don't want to give offense to Muslims. And by the way, people who are engaging in this stealthy form of jihad, particularly the Muslim Brotherhood, are very adept at being offended. And they make a point wherever they can of saying, hey, you can't say anything against Islam. You can't even discuss the relationship between Sharia and jihad. You can't even really talk about jihad in connection with terrorism without giving offense to us. It's considered a blasphemy. It's unacceptable. So now, at the risk of being called racists, bigots, Islamophobes, or just having their careers blighted, many in these communities that are responsible for our safety are unable to focus on what is causing these problems. And it's as though, Greg, as most of us are now thinking about swine flu, it's as though our medical community and our scientists were told, treat this problem, but don't understand that there is a common virus at work that is prompting these symptoms to manifest themselves in Latin America, Australia, Europe, here, all over the world. It would be impossible as a practical matter to deal with the outbreak of this pandemic, let alone to prevent more and more and more people from getting sick if you couldn't understand the virus. And I think the same is true with respect to understanding the animating effect and purpose given to jihad by Sharia.
Let me follow up on what you just said in a couple different ways. First of all, how have we already seen it infect, to keep the metaphor going, our own culture because of our lack of willingness to address it as a root cause?
Well, of course, of late we've seen reports of these several plots of incipient terrorist attacks
Sure.
that have happily not materialized, thanks to some good law enforcement work, and credit where it's due. More insidious, as I say, is the insinuation into our society of the kind of submissiveness on the part of the non-Muslim population to Islam that is part and parcel of this Sharia program. Actually, the term Islam means submission. And whether it's Muslims submitting to Allah or whether it's the rest of us submitting to Muslims, that's the purpose of Sharia. And it's manifesting itself in lots of ways, most of which seem pretty innocuous, frankly. They're incremental steps. It's the foot baths put in public spaces for the use of Muslims. It's corporations that decide, hey, we have to have a dedicated prayer room for Muslims and time off for prayers, or holidays that it's given to our workforce, for all of our workforce, in honor of religious holidays of Islam. It's the fact that Sharia-compliant finance, a practice that is said to be the obligation of Muslims, is now being increasingly insinuated into our financial system. It's practices like, unhygienic personal habits on the part of people working in American food production facilities on the grounds that their faith says you can't use soap. I mean, these are the sorts of accommodations, and these are just a handful of many I could cite, but they're the kinds of accommodations that we're taking, I believe, at our peril. In the case of unhygienic treatment of food, that's pretty obvious. But more generally, it's the kind of creeping Sharia, or as Robert Spencer likes to say, stealth jihad, that is at work here and that ultimately leads to what we've seen very clearly in Europe now, which is that there are some 751 areas in France. They call them zones urbaines sensibles, that is to say, no-go zones, that the law enforcement and other authorities of France can't safely go into, where Sharia is being practiced. And that, I'm afraid, is where this inexorably takes us here, too, if we do not stop this kind of steady, incremental, stealthy accommodations, submission.
And of course, then that leads to basically cells of their own, wherever they would set them up. Flip it around, Frank. If we weren't afraid of political correctness, what would be the right approach to this encroaching threat as you see it?
I think, first of all, we would be identifying it as the threat it is. Second of all, I think we would be talking about the happy fact that there are millions of Muslims, particularly in America, who don't practice their faith according to Sharia. In fact, many Muslims came to this country to get away from Sharia in their own homelands. Those are our natural allies in this fight. We don't want to drive them into the arms of the Sharia adherent, but we should be clear, in the absence of this kind of honesty about the problem, it's not the faith necessarily, it is the practice of the faith as a cover for this very subversive, I call it seditious, political agenda. Brutally repressive, totalitarian in character, but fundamentally antithetical to the Constitution and freedoms of the United States. To the extent that we have Muslims who don't want to be subjected to it either, any more than the rest of us do, we need to be strengthening them and helping them resist what is the increasing effort to dominate them and us by the Sharia adherent ones. And at the bottom line, Greg, I think we need to make clear that America is a place that people can come to be free of Sharia. And if they want to live under Sharia, there are lots of other places around the world where they can, but it can't happen here because it is not constitutional. It is not consistent with our freedoms, and it is not consistent with America as we've known it and as I think all of us want to bequeath it to our kids.
That's certainly true, and we often focus on the what, but not necessarily the why, and that's a big part of it. Frank, as always, great pleasure having you with us.
Great to be with you. Thanks.
Frank Affney, former Assistant Secretary of Defense, President of the Center for Security Policy, host of Secure Freedom Radio on the Radio America Network. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.